Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec from Bloomberg Radio.
Carol Messer along with Tim Stenovec live here in our Bloomberg studio at Bloomberg headquarters. Obviously, the main event is what we just heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell up on Capitol Hill. Charlie breaking down some of those key points. The Fed Chair reiterated to lawmakers at the U.S. Central Bank, no rush to cut interest rates. Feel like, Tim, we got a little bit of everything. And the Fed Chair really pointing out the importance of not going too soon and also not going too late in terms of making moves to cut rates.
Yeah, here's what he said. We believe that our policy rate is likely at its peak for this tightening cycle. He repeated language used at his last press conference just at the end of January. He also repeated his claim from the January press conference that rate cuts are likely to be appropriate at some point this year. And, you know, I think the market's reacting accordingly.
All right, so let's get to it with more on Chair Powell's comments and U.S. financial market reaction. Delighted to have with us Bloomberg News international economics and policy correspondent Michael McKee. He's there in our D.C. bureau. He's been listening all morning. So, too, has Bloomberg News markets reporter Abigail Doolittle. She's here in our studio. And, Mike, I want to start with you. It does feel like we understood the message at the last FOMC meeting, and I feel like we got a lot of that as well. But what for you, was there anything that was new, nuanced, a little bit different from the FOMC meeting? What is it that was so important in terms of what we got from the Fed Chair today?
I appreciate your asking, Carol.
This was the
functional equivalent of Wall Street hoping for a new suit and getting hand-me-downs. It was the same old from the Fed Chair. He really can't say anything else at this point. It was more explanatory than anything else, and it's a story that traders have heard now for some weeks from Chair Powell and many other members of the Open Market Committee. But what did stand out today, and what was maybe a little bit of a surprise, was how much bipartisan anger there was at the Basel III endgame bank regulations that the Fed is looking at right now. These grow out of an international effort to raise capital levels and regulation standards in banks around the world. The U.S. hasn't implemented it yet. They've put together a process for putting it in place, and they put it out for comment, and they've gotten a lot of negative comment from the banking industry, who have also sent comments, apparently, to their local representatives. We knew Republicans didn't like it, but today we really got an earful from some Democratic representatives as well. They think it's going to result in less lending to the banks from the banks in their districts. Their banks will be less profitable. In other words, the message from the representatives is, this is bad for business, so it's bad for the economy. Jay Powell was receptive. He was one of four Fed members who originally said they had problems with the issue. He made that clear. He said that they are looking at it. They're still digesting all the comments. But as he said, what we could see is broad and deep changes in the regulations before they come out. And he went so far as to say that it is possible they would withdraw the proposal altogether. So the congressmen were heard today, at least on that issue.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, because you kind of opened the door to where we need to go with Abigail, because, yep, we want to talk about markets generally, but most importantly, what's going on with New York Community Bancorp, if we may, Abigail, because as the Fed Chair, Jay Powell, was getting lots of detailed questions, as Mike said, on banking regulation, how to prevent another crisis, developing news on New York Community Bancorp, which is halted as we speak, but it was down as much as 47% before that halt.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible here. This beleaguered regional bank, the news just can't get worse. It just keeps getting worse and worse, it seems. And to your point, they are saying that they're trying to raise equity capital. That's been the big question with all the headlines that have come out recently in terms of they're talking about the poor oversight of loans. And then we had a couple of downgrades. One of the downgrades was key because it was a downgrade of basically a certain portion of their business to junk. And they suggested that if that happened, that they could see outflows. One thing they have not updated investors on through all of this are their deposits. So in February, deposits and liquidity was very helpful or healthy, but to not make that update through all of this, you know, you could take it one way or the other, that it's either really bad, they don't want to share that, or they want to pull a rabbit out of the hat. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes on the other side of this.
Hey, Abigail, I want to broaden this out a little bit and just talk about the equity market reaction in general to what we heard from Jay Powell earlier. We do see stocks higher by 0.8%. The NASDAQ composite up by 1%. The Dow up by 0.5 percentage point. Any surprising moves from you after yesterday's sell-off, given what we heard from Powell?
Not really. I mean, the biggest surprise is actually Apple. It's down ever so slightly. I mean, it's not down a lot, but you would think that we'd start to have a snapback for that stock at some point. And some of the momentum indicators suggested that, given the fact that it is down about 14% from its peak. You would think that it would also be participating in this rally. But this rally is a nice snapback from yesterday's sell-off. To your point, the S&P 500 up about 0.9%. Chips doing really well, up 3.2%. So a big rally there. I think very interesting to take a look at is bonds. We have yields down just a little bit. So this tells you, I mean, my take on this, on Fed Chair Powell's testimony so far, to Mike's point, you know, nothing new here. But I think that there was probably a little bit of fear was, would Powell suggest that there would be no cuts this year. Now, if that had happened, I think we would have seen yields spike sharply higher and stocks tumble. The fact that the worst case scenario didn't happen, we seem to have this relief rally. Doesn't mean it's going to continue, not really, because yesterday put a little bit of near-term technical damage for stocks, but investors feel a little bit more sure of themselves today.
You know, our New York team also reporting that Treasury yields hit a new session low after that initial Wall Street Journal report about New York Community Bancorp looking to raise equity capital. We've also reported this story out. And I was looking at kind of the KRE regional bank ETF. It's down about 2%, and it looked like it took a dip as well on concerns. And I do wonder, you know, when we think about the broader market, we always, Abigail, talk with you about the importance of the mega cap tech names in terms of momentum, whether it's Apple or some of the others. And you laid out some of the move to the upside that we've seen. How important is it to what we see in the financial sector broadly, in the regional bank sector, to the overall market trade?
Well, it's interesting to see the sympathy that we do see in the KRE. So the biggest decliner, not surprisingly, was NYCB before it was halted. I'm looking right now, only three members are up out of 140. So we have 137 banks down. But what's so interesting is, as I've dug into the commercial real, and it is trading again now, NYCB. I was looking at KRE. Got a little bit excited to see.
We have a lot of screens up right now, everybody.
Yes, we have a lot of screens here. But as I've been digging into this, so of the 25 top regional banks, they have maybe 13-14% exposure to commercial real estate. And apparently they are well funded enough that there shouldn't be an issue. The smaller regional banks, they have roughly 44%. So there could be some other blowups. But I was talking to an expert yesterday, and he was saying it's not going to be the saving and loans crisis back in the 1990s. It's not going to be hundreds of banks. If anything, it's not even going to be dozens, he said. He said maybe it would be a dozen. So the fact that you have this contagion trade here right now in terms of stocks down. Now, even though the bulk of them are down, the next biggest one to NYCB is down 5.9%, which is a sizable decline.
Right.
That's Southside Bank shares. But I guess what I'm saying is that the contagion may not be, it's headline contagion as opposed to actual fundamentals. A lot of folks don't think it's going
to
be
that
bad.
It's important to understand the fundamentals of each of these names.
I want to go back to Mike McKee on this and stay on New York Community Bank, because there are some parts of this that are tied to the Fed and to regulators. Mike, just weigh in on this with your observations.
Well, it's interesting. Jay Powell was certainly asked about banks and commercial real estate, and he said it's going to be a problem that can be worked out. They're not particularly worried about it, but it's going to take years for all this to go through the system, and there will be losses. But he was not directly asked about NYCB, either because members of Congress didn't know what was happening today, or because they realize that the Fed does not regulate NYCB. It's the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency that is NYCB's regulator. And one of the interesting things, Abby was talking about the deposit base. Most of their deposit base is insured, so it's not like SVB was, where people felt like they were going to lose their money. And the other thing about their deposit base is that about a year ago, they bought Flagstar Bank. They moved all their deposits into it, and apparently the deposits from Signature Bank, when they took that over, also went into Flagstar. Now, who knows that Flagstar is owned by NYCB? So the average person isn't rushing to pull their money out of Flagstar because they don't know the connection there.
Great point.
It sounds like the members of Congress got to get some terminals if they don't know that during the Fed
chair
testimony.
We'll have to ship them right down.
We did get...
If they're interested, I know where they can subscribe to the terminal. Okay,
I did thought I heard a few call-outs there, Mike.
Yes, I mean, more than I think any other news organization, to brag a little bit, but two or three times members cited stories from Bloomberg when they were prefacing their questions.
Abigail, let's broaden it out a little bit, too. I mean, as we continue to track the trade after we've been concerned a lot, yesterday there was a lot of conversations about, you know, overvaluations and whether or not we were kind of maybe a new trend line and so on and so forth. You know, we're going to go back to Mike in a moment because we've had a lot of economic news and obviously Jay Powell covering a lot of the economic backdrop, if you will. Having said that, the trade, the momentum behind the groups that are moving to the upside, is it some momentum behind it?
So overall, the momentum for the markets is down. We've been talking about this for a while, the RSI, the momentum indicator. The last time we saw a high, it was last year. So all of these record highs that we've had recently, not today, but they've been made on less good momentum. And I think some of that does have to do with the Apple trade, the fact that that stock is in a correction. Now, relative to the breadth today, it's much better because we have most, we might even at this point, we have all 11 S&P 500 sectors higher. So it is broad-based from a volume standpoint. Let's see how excited investors are about this relief from Powell that it's not going to be a year of no cut. So it's a little bit above average. So it is somewhat healthy. I would say, though, it's the consolidation that we saw yesterday for big tech, the worst day at one point going back to last year. It's healthy. So it would it wouldn't be a bad thing to see a little bit more.
And it was interesting because we saw buying into the close yesterday, which was really significant. Yes. Hey, Mike, back to you. In terms of the economic backdrop, it's still, I think, back to the last FOMC meeting where Jay Powell several times in the press conference was like, folks, it's good out there, the U.S. economy. Did we get that message very strongly as well?
Oh, well, you put it that way. We got the message, but not very strongly. There wasn't a whole lot of focus on it. It was in his opening statement that job creation has been strong, inflation's been coming down. Overall, things look pretty good in the U.S. economy. Later in the hearing, he was asked about the possibility of recession, and he says there doesn't seem to be any indication that there's any short-term risk of recession in the U.S. economy. A couple of the Democrats used their time to talk about how good the economy was, maybe from a political stance, but the economy was not front and center today. Mm-hmm. Interesting, also not front and center was the stock market. You would think that maybe he would have gotten asked about asset prices being overvalued or something like that, and that didn't really come up either. Members were more concerned about things like whether the Fed is getting involved in climate change, the housing market, maybe the closest thing to the economic issues that were talked about. And basically all Powell could say is, yeah, well, we raised rates. But as rates come down, the housing market should loosen up.
All right. So having said that, we do also get a lot of economic data points. We have been over the last couple of weeks, some data today as well. JOLTS, always an important number to watch. We're going to have the Beige Book in about 45 minutes or so. Give us, you know, remind us, Mike, about the backdrop that we continue to get in terms of some of the data points.
Well, that's the key thing. The Fed says it's going to be data dependent, and they're going to look at a broad range of indicators, including jobs. And we get the jobs report on Friday. It's expected to show a relatively strong job creation continued during the month of February. They'll be looking at average hourly earnings, wanting to see if there's an inflation problem there. And then next week, we get another CPI report. Seems like only yesterday, doesn't it?
It does.
We'll get a CPI report. They'll be looking at that, and then PPI, and we'll see where inflation is. The Fed meetings the week after that, on the 20th, they've already said they're not going to move then. So then the focus turns to the May 1st meeting, and we'll see what the numbers add up to by then. But right now, it looks pretty good. The question is, does inflation keep going down? That's going to be the one major point to trade upon.
Hey, Mike, how does this set things up for Jay Powell tomorrow when he's in front of the Senate? Do we have any indication that the line of questioning will be similar, i.e. hear more about Basel III and questions about that?
I think that's what you'll get. Senate questioning tends to be more detailed, more specific, less political. And so probably some more questions about when they might cut interest rates. But then I would imagine a lot of people are going to be on both sides of the issue tomorrow in the Senate on banking, because you can bet Elizabeth Warren is going to let the chairman know they should be as tough as possible on the banks. That's been her position. So we may get some interesting cross arguments from members of the committee tomorrow. May get more on climate change. That's also been an issue of how far is the Fed allowed to go in what it's doing on climate change. There was one question today about the Fed and its balance sheet, but it wasn't really about when they're going to start running it down. It was more about the Fed's losses. Jay Powell saying doesn't affect our operations. It's really just a bookkeeping exercise. So we might see more of that as well. I wonder if we'll see much more political posturing. We really didn't today, which is something you usually get from members of the House.
We did see some questions about housing affordability, Mike, which I found interesting, given that things aren't necessarily going the way that economists typically think they'll go when rates go higher. Home prices should go down because mortgages become more expensive. That got thrown out the window over the last couple of years. What did you make of the line of questioning around housing affordability? Because as the point that you've made many times before is the idea with the Fed raising rates is things do get more expensive, so demand goes down.
Well, that's the problem here is we're in a different environment with housing than we've been in that anybody could remember, because rates got so low. A lot of people out there, I think something like 40-50% have rates under 4%, and right now we're over 7%, so nobody wants to sell their house because they don't want to have to buy a more expensive mortgage. It was different if you were selling a 7% mortgage and you're looking at a 6% or an 8% mortgage. It's not that much different, but now it would be a huge difference in monthly payments, so everybody's just sitting there. There's no inventory on the market of existing homes. There aren't enough new homes being built, so the price goes up, simply supply and demand. Yeah. They need to get interest rates down, mortgage rates down, then maybe pent-up demand to move will take over, and we'll see some additional inventory come on the market. But this may be a one-time significant jump in home prices that doesn't go away.
Hey, Mike, theoretically, at least, the Fed is not supposed to be looking at the stock market or stock prices, but one stock that's really tough to not watch is NVIDIA. And of course, for that AI play, you know, a lot of people are thinking that AI is going to juice the economy in a massive, massive way, you know, if not this year or in a couple of years. How much did Fed Chair Jay Powell speak about AI and the possible influence on the economy?
Not very much. He was starting to get asked about it when the questioner ran out of time, and they really didn't come back to it all that much. The Fed's position is it seems to be something that will add to productivity, but we're going to have to watch it and make sure and see where the productivity comes from and what downrange impacts that has. Who loses jobs, who gets jobs, that sort of thing. They're not really ready to comment on that. There was a big conference on Friday of Fed officials in New York City, and that was one of the major topics, but it didn't come up as much as you might have thought today on Capitol Hill.
Maybe tomorrow.
One of the few people who aren't just talking about AI. Hey, Mike, just real quickly, 30 seconds. One thing that struck me is Fed Chair Jay Powell saying the pandemic's still writing the story of our economy right now, and we should be prepared to be surprised with the next chapter. A reminder that we still don't know how this all ends.
We don't. And if you keep up with some of the medical literature, the doctors are all warning it's still out there. There's still mutations, and we have to be careful. We've also changed our inventory systems, and the supply chains that we have been modified, but have they been modified enough for the next occurrence? Those are the kind of things the Fed has to worry about.
Yep, it's why we're data dependent and just kind of finding our way through. Hey guys, thank you so much. A lot of news, obviously, on this Wednesday. Great breakdown. Fed Chair Jay Powell, his testimony, first of 2 days, and of course the market reaction. Our thanks to our Bloomberg News International Economics and Policy Correspondent Michael McKee in D.C. and Bloomberg News Markets Reporter Abigail Doolittle right in studio. We're coming back in just a moment.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Listen on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Just to rehash our top story, I would say, safe to say here, on this Wednesday, New York Community Bancorp planning to announce an equity investment of more than $1 billion led by Steven Mnuchin's Liberty Strategic Capital, Hudson Bay Capital, and Reverence Capital Partners. According to a spokesperson for the bank, Liberty will be investing $450 million, Hudson Bay $250 million, Reverence $200 million as part of the transaction. Also, NYCB will add new directors to its board, including Steven Mnuchin and Joseph Otting, a former comptroller of the currency, the board of NYCB to be reduced to 9 members, and this transaction to close on or around March 11th. And a quick check in terms of shares of New York Community Bank still halted, but we are getting some more details here, and we'll continue to follow it as they cross the Bloomberg.
Yeah, New York Community Bank also to sell and issue shares at $2 per share and name Joseph Otting as the company's CEO. For more, let's bring in Herman Chan, Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Analyst for U.S. Regional Banks. Herman, a lot has happened just in the moments that you sat down in our studio this afternoon. Is this infusion enough to save New York Community Bank?
Look, it does offer a lifeline for them, especially given the way the stock has traded over the past few days. That being said, the existing equity shareholders have been massively diluted. We're talking about a bank that has a bit over $1 billion in market cap, and they're raising over $1 billion with this equity infusion. So it's a tough pill to swallow for the shareholders that were riding it. But it does give them some time to shore up all the issues that we've talked about.
Explain what this does to existing shareholders of the bank. If you're offering new shares at $2 per share and at a $1 billion value, what does it do to existing shareholders?
Right. So basically, your ownership of the earning stream is now down by 50%.
Okay.
So it's great for the company that it can still operate, given all the uncertainty, but It's just a changing of the guard and changing of the shareholders.
Getting $1 billion lifeline, does that guarantee that this is a bank can continue to exist? And I don't want to be inflammatory. Mm-hmm. I want to be smart here. But $1 billion is a lot of money. Is that enough to fix the balance sheet and the risks that are out there?
It really depends on what's going to happen with the deposits. Right now, it should placate a lot of folks that were maybe a little bit uncertain about what the path is ahead. But we've changed the management team yet again. There's a new CEO now with Joseph Otting. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot on his to-do list to shore up its capital even more, reduce their exposure to commercial real estate, and make sure their employees and customers stay within the bank. So that's a lot.
We just had a new CEO right. Joined New York Community Bank, Sandra DiNello.
Right. So Sandra looks like he's out now, and Joseph Otting has been announced the new CEO. Sandra will remain as the non-executive chairman of the board.
Can I ask you, when we've talked about this before, when we initially got that headline, a couple of days ago or mm-hmm. so, about material weaknesses, mm-hmm. and we had this conversation that's what a bank's supposed to do, right, in terms right. of risk oversight. So, I mean, do we know whether or not that they've fixed that problem? Does a cash infusion mm-hmm. just fix that problem?
It doesn't. So that's also... I should have mentioned earlier on the to-do list.
And forgive me, about 30 seconds here.
Sure. And so that's something, Joseph Otting was a former head of the OCC, and they're regulated by the OCC. So that should give them a good plan to go ahead and make sure their regulatory issues are dealt with in a proper manner.
We should also mention another headline crossing. Investors include Citadel Securities. So reaching out to a bunch of members of kind of the financial community.
That's right.
All right. What's next on your radar?
You know, this has taken up so much time. So we're just looking for the fallouts ahead. We've got a webinar going on tomorrow about the year after with SVB.
All right. Going to look forward to that. Herman Chan, thank you so much. A member of our Bloomberg Intelligence team watching these regionals for us. Again, shares of NYCB not trading yet. This is Bloomberg Business Week.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Well, here on Bloomberg Business Week and at Bloomberg News, we follow foreign direct investment very closely because each year, countries around the world compete for more than $1 trillion in FDI flows. Multinational corporations must weigh the shifting landscape, the evolving risk-return profile of countries, while governments and international trade bodies lay down foundations and incentives to compete for their investments.
Maggie Svitek is Senior Director of the Milken Institute's Research Department. She focuses on access to economic opportunities in the U.S. and around the globe. She joins us from Santa Monica, California. Maggie, great to have you here. A busy day, but we did want to include your report that you've got, a new report about the most attractive countries for foreign direct investment. And what struck us is that they are all advanced economies. Just briefly go over kind of some of the key findings here.
Yes, absolutely. So in the report that we just put out, we use our Global Opportunity Index. So what the Global Opportunity Index really does is that it provides a benchmark for countries' attractiveness to international investors. And the way we do it is we use 100 different indicators that we classify into five different categories that are business perception, economic fundamentals, financial services, international standards and policy, and institutional framework. And so in the report itself, we pair the findings from the Global Opportunity Index together with capital movements around the globe. And what that does is it really provides a comprehensive overview of opportunities for investors outside of their local markets, as well mm-hmm. as it provides information to countries that are interested in improving their business environments by letting them see, you know, what are the factors that they could work on in order to become more attractive to investors. So what you mentioned there is that the countries that tend to perform among the top 20 are all advanced economies. So this is actually something that is not surprising.
I was going to say that seems to be expected, right? We think, because in terms of all those metrics you laid out, you know, it's interesting. Here we are focused on New York Community Bancorp today. And there has been lots of concerns surrounding this bank over the last few weeks in particular, and the last week in particular. And yet, you know, there are the means often sometimes from investors to kind of help out this situation. And I think about in the developed economies, that is available versus some of the emerging economies where that's not likely or as easily done.
Yes, no, and so absolutely. These countries, these top 20 countries in our index, they're really strong in institutional framework. They have a good business perception, which, again, as you mentioned, is not surprising. These advanced economies really do attract the majority of capital inflows. They attract around 65%, our top 20 countries, of capital inflows from around the world. So it's also not surprising, again, as you mentioned, that they're on the top. However, what we say in the report and what we also highlight is that in addition to paying attention to these advanced countries, which are increasing their attractiveness as interest rates are remaining high among the advanced economies, investors should really also keep a lookout on the emerging countries and emerging and developing regions. And the reason why is because those offer, well, two reasons. First of all, they can offer high growth returns.
Right.
And also, at the same time, these are countries that really need capital, right?
So that's what I want to talk about. That's exactly what I want to talk about, and sort of the idea of the risk profile. So if we remove some of the criteria that you include, but only look at where there's a potential for a bigger return for these investments, how does that profile change when it comes to advanced economies versus not advanced economies?
So yeah, so definitely among the non-advanced economies, that's really where the growth is still remaining. So we see a lot of investment moving nowadays into Latin America, especially in 2022. So we know that emerging and developing Asia is really the region that that captures a lot of the capital inflows in general. However, in 2022, we saw a movement of capital a little bit out of emerging and developing Asia and into Latin America. And there's really a lot of growth potential in Latin America. And when we talk about Latin America, there's really two countries that stand out. It's Mexico and Brazil, right? These are the two major economies in Latin America. However, there's also other countries such as Chile, which is a slightly smaller economy, but still a considerable economy in Latin America.
Hey, Maggie, one thing I want, and I'm glad you talked to Latin America, because we've certainly spent more time here at Bloomberg focusing on what is happening there in terms of investment opportunities. Having said that, we spend a lot of time on another country economy that is so important to global growth, and that is China. And we've done a fair amount of story about investors not so keen to be putting money into that country. What can you tell us on that front? Because when we think about China, right, the second most important economy to global growth.
Yes, no. And so China actually continues to score high in our index. It scores at number 39. We're considering that it is still an emerging and developing economy as classified by the IMF, is relatively high. In China, we have still a very strong innovation economy that is continuing to be paying off. However, what we did see, and exactly what you're saying, is that in 2022, for the first time in a long time, capital inflows into China became negative, which means that more money left China than entered. So that is what we are seeing there. So when we think about the factors that really are strong in China, are financial services. They have a very developed or relatively developed for an emerging nation financial services sector, and precisely this innovation economy, which tends to prop it up in its institutional framework.
Right.
However, innovation, as we know, has been in the past observed to be stifled by excessive government intervention. So to the extent that that becomes an issue in China in the long term, investors can anticipate that and start moving their capital out. Yeah, however, what I want to say is also, this is something that we're observing right now. Whether or not this continues into the future, that is another question.
All right, yes. We're going to leave it there. Maggie, thank you so much. Maggie Switek, she's Senior Director at Milken Institute's Research Department, joining us from Santa Monica, California.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Keep driving you crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 18 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. Carol Masser along with Tim Stenovic. Charlie, of course, breaking down the trade here. We're definitely off our best levels of the day when it comes to the equity trade. But green across the board, albeit kind of small moves here, but we do have... the NASDAQ 100 looks like beating the major equity averages on a percentage basis, up about 0.6%, Tim.
Okay, so what does our next guest have to say about all of this? She focuses on bonds.
Not like anything was going on today.
Yeah, exactly. Like not anything was going on. Joanne Bianco is investment partner and client portfolio manager at Bond Blocks. It's an ETF issuer focused on fixed income, about $2.6 billion in assets. She joins us from Chicago. Carol, I want to toss it over to you because you got a really good question that's very timely for Joanne.
Joanne, great to have you here with Tim and myself. And we just want to start with the news of the day. And we're kind of a little obsessed, but rightfully so, watching New York Community Bancorp stock is up about 5% here. Quite wild swings, but on a day where they raised over $1 billion in an equity investment, handful of investors, well-known investors, as we heard from our Matthew Monks, U.S. Deals reporter earlier. Having said that, with this $1 billion equity investment, would you buy the debt of New York Community Bancorp?
That's a really good question. It's definitely a very fast-moving situation, and it's obviously very good news for them to receive this $1 billion equity investment. It's certainly a vote of confidence. We don't think that their troubles translate yet into a more worrisome contagion effect, but it's just going to be a matter of time to see if this does give the market the confidence that it needs to be willing to invest in their debt.
So is that a no, you wouldn't buy their debt at this point?
No, I think it's a tough question. It's a tough question.
When would you, what would you need to see from the bank and from the balance sheet in order to say, okay, yeah, I would do this?
I think you would want to see that this really does stabilize the situation. So something, this equity investment would be such that It's big enough such that it does really shore up their capital situation. And so, I mean, I'm just not close enough to the situation to really know for sure what it means.
No, that's fair enough. But when you look, okay, so widen out, let's just stick with, before we get into kind of Jay Powell, which was how we kicked off our broadcast a few hours ago, coming off of his testimony up on Capitol Hill. But when you broaden out more broadly in kind of the corporate bond mm-hmm. space, what's attractive at this point? Where do you find opportunity?
Well, we're at elevated yields for corporate bonds because of the, you know, the interest rate scenario that the market is faced with. And so, and also a very resilient economy, which has translated into strong fundamentals that continue for corporations. So we like corporate credit, both investment grade and high yield. But within investment grade corporate bonds, we're particularly constructive on the triple B rating category. We feel like why shouldn't investors take advantage of the increased yield and total return potential in triple Bs?
So across the board in terms of, so nothing in terms of sector or industry specific?
Well, there's a number of sectors that we like as well. I mean, the energy sector has been very strong, really good credit quality. There's been a lot of focus on balance sheet management there. And, you know, the price of oil and it has been very helpful in terms of the type of cash flow that those companies can generate because of current commodity pricing. So that's definitely something we like. We also like companies in the core industrial sector as well. It's just, again, the resilience in the economy. Resilience is not an overused word to describe the economic conditions that corporations are faced with. Mm.
You know, we talked a lot of our program, and at least in the first special hour that we did following Jay Powell testifying in front of the House. He'll be in the front of the Senate tomorrow. Of course, talking a lot about the rate environment and the way rates move to change. Rates may change this year. What happens when to your business when rates do fall?
Well, there could be a total return tailwind for investors in fixed income. Prices would go up of the securities that they hold. So it would be a good thing there.
But what about new money coming into the ETF? Yeah, what about new flows coming into the ETFs, though, in a lower rate environment?
Again, you know, we're not expecting that rates are going to go back down to the really low near zero levels that they were at before. So there's still going to be a place for fixed income and fixed income ETFs in people's portfolios in terms of the type of attractive opportunities that will be available.
I do want to ask you about your thoughts on what Fed Chair Jay Powell had to say today. Basically, you know, our analysis with our in-house group and externally is that basically we got a lot of what Jay Powell said at the last Fed meeting. And so not necessarily any new surprises. Didn't talk a ton about the economy, but the Fed, of course, concerned about going too soon when it comes mm-hmm. to cutting rates, but also were you know, concerned about staying where they are too long and the impact it could have longer term on economic growth. What was key for you, if there was anything here that you thought was constructive, especially when it comes to the investment environment in your world?
Well, I mean, he definitely reiterated that there is no rush for the Fed to cut rates, that they definitely want to continue to watch the data that comes in. I don't think I think positive for the market, positive for fixed income and equities that he was saying that we're at peak rates, you know, because that obviously it would be if we expected rates to have to be increased significantly from here, that would be something that would be probably more negative, certainly for the equity market, possibly could be harder on the economy as well.
Would you, just in the last 90 seconds that we have with you, last minute, I should say, what would have to happen, in your opinion, for the Fed chair to not follow through with the idea that we're at peak rates right now? Like, what would have to happen in the economy for the Fed to raise rates one more time, like we heard posited from Larry Summers a few weeks ago?
Well, a reacceleration in inflation that's sustained.
Okay.
I mean, that's the short answer and the long answer.
Well, look, I mean, you bring up a good point. We're getting the February jobs numbers on Friday. And if that's, you know, comes in way past expectations, CPI happens next week also. And if that number comes in once again hot, then I think people might start asking those questions, Carol.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Going to leave it there. Hey, Joanne, thank you so much. Really appreciate your input here today. Joanne Bianco, she's investment partner and client portfolio manager over at BondBox, joining us in Chicago.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.